Welcome to Star from the Nurse On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games, of an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder, to join us. We have podcasts every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on phone to solve 562-044, just follow the direction call ID 17702. Or you can participate in the web, just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702, or more importantly, you can probably just look for the latest episode, the upcoming episodes, and you'll find us there. And of course, if you want the best online experience, what you want to do is you want to go to twitch.tv. It's twitch.tv/SFUOnCall, and you will find us there. Now, just a reminder, next week is the last week for streaming live on TalkShoe. Last week for calling in to TalkShoe. After that, I am dropping TalkShoe as my one of the things I stream to, because it's just I'm trying to improve things. I'm hoping that maybe not streaming to them will actually help the podcast. Believe it or not, it's not a weird idea, but hey, I'm willing to try it. Otherwise, I'll keep posting there. I just won't be streaming there anymore. In the future, I'll post the link for the Discord server on sfuoncall.com, and also so you can join us on the Discord server. If you want to listen live, you can either go to Discord, that Discord server, and you can go to SFU on call stream, or you can go to twitch.tv, which, as I mentioned before, is one of the best ways of actually seeing it stream live. And no, I'm not going to stream on YouTube. I see no reason to stream it on YouTube at this moment in time. And I'm not going to go into that at this moment in time. Of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you'll follow me on the Twitters, of course, I have sfuoncall, but also have the Paul Franz account, PaulFranz, and the Franz Game account, FranzGames. Neither one of those has a T in it, so remember that. If you're in Pennsylvania, you go, oh, okay. Everybody else is going, huh? Don't ask. But anyway, this podcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. Actually, it's pretty quiet at ADB at the moment. Haven't heard anything from them. So, in my mind, no news is good news at the moment. That's what I'm hoping. But this week, found online store is the FNE Player Folios. It's only $2. They're a set of 8 expendable player folios for FNE. Each folio has 4 pages. For those of you who play FNE, you know, on the board, you know, on a table someplace, that I'm sure you'd be good to have a couple extra of those. And they're only $2 for a set of 8. So I think that'd be really helpful for you to have some extras. Moving on and forward, when it comes to the set of our Start 19 tournament, we have 2 additional signups. I did send it out. I want to send it out actually again. I made a mistake. I forgot to update the judge. I didn't realize Stephen Petrick was actually mentioned as the judge. Stephen Petrick is not the judge this year. This time around. This time around, it's me, and going forward, I will be the judge for all Sapphire Star tournaments going forward. I think we have currently 8, so we need 8 more people. I will send it out again, and hopefully people will start to sign up. I want to send the correction just in case people are concerned that it's going to be run by Steve Petrick still. But I want to make sure people know that it's going to be me, that we should not have the issues with Steve Petrick's medical issues they've had in the past. So I should be more available than Steve Petrick. So just to let you know how that is going. The 500 BPP tournament, as I said last week, we got another tournament we were supposed to play last night. Both Frank misunderstood what I said. And in a way, it was fortuitous because Frank actually couldn't play last night. Hopefully, we can play tomorrow night. I got to check. I'm pretty sure I can do it tomorrow night. But so we can probably be turn it. We can continue on playing with that game, and hopefully I can get Frank up to date with the client, and things will all, should all be good at that moment in time when it comes to the client. Because that's one thing that also happened, which was I released an updated client 4.8.2. Now, hopefully this will solve all of the, well, yeah, it should solve all the problems I've had in the past. Assuming that, okay, anyone who has not upgraded to at least 4.81 at this point, actually doesn't reinstall 4.81, please do so. It should be good. Yeah, obviously 4.82 is the one that you want to install, and anyone to install 4.81, you should be able to do it in them in app update, except for Windows. Windows, there's an issue with the way the startup is set up. It's annoying as heck, but it because it basically because of the way startup, it won't allow the files to be updated. So doing an in-app update will not actually update the files. I don't have any control over that packager and so forth. I have some control, but I'm not sure if I can get that to work. I think I tried to work on that before and it didn't quite work. So, but anyway, 4.82, and that should solve the issues I've actually, the one issues that I've been having. I've been trying to go forward with the latest updates from the one third party library, and it just seems to be causing, it's gotten better. It still has issues. So I went back and I went to the previous version, a really old version that works. That's what's in 4.62, and that's what 4.6, it should all work fine there. So you should, anyone who wants to, they can go to 5.82, 4.82, and it should all work fine as long as you do a reinstall, uninstall and reinstall with that version of the client, you should be good to go. Moving on to the library. No progress there either on SAP or FedCon. So with that is the news for this week. It's me, yes, the one only Paul Friends welcoming you, the star of the universe, on call. And tonight we have Gary. Say hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary.
And we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
Woohoo! Got two people. Oh, we got three. Of course, got me. Because I gotta make sure I can count. I can count. So for those of you, there, I'm all set. Just want to make sure that I'm watching my actual stream. Because as most of you know by now, if you've been watching me long enough, I have my iPad over here just as my kind of stream manager tells me what exactly is being streamed and that it's actually working. I know Doug had an issue where he wasn't seeing it, but I was seeing it, so which means I was seeing it, that's all that matters. Okay. On to the topic for this evening. But I was actually going to start with, where is it? I was reading something kind of interesting on the discussion board. Actually, Gary, you're involved. Which is, I read it, and I definitely, I like as I said, I thought it was kind of interesting in that mind warfare for the Omegas. And one thing that obviously that I'm reading through this, and the one thing that hit, struck me was Metal Hull Omega Empires, and of course I totally forgot about the two organic empires, the Ollanda and the Branthadons, and when it comes to laying down minefields, and because they basically to be interesting. They're all their ships. They're not. They don't have metal hull ships. That's my understanding. They don't even have fighters, correct? Actually, I don't think. Okay, next that. I don't think Omega's actually had fighters. But I know they had gunboats, IEPFs. They're called gunboats. But
Well, so okay, so that's somewhat adjacent to the Omega topic I actually wanted to talk with you tonight about, but I should note that both the Alunda and Brant films, the way that they deal with fighters is that they have there's basically parasitic creatures that attach themselves naturally, so to speak, to the various creatures that they operate. So, like for example, the Alunda. So, in the quote unquote wild, the space whales have these remora-like parasites that like connect to like feed off them.
Right.
And so, what the Alunda did, the Mern, rather, the species that runs the Alunda host, they bioengineered both the host ship and also the remora creature to have a more symbiotic relationship for carriers. So
Oh.
if you see your Alunda carrier, you'll see a bunch of these remora creatures basically sticking their teeth into it, but into like a part of the ship that's been like modified so that it doesn't actually harm the host creature. And similarly, the space dragons in the wild have these other kind of parasitic creatures. I guess they're called Wyverns. And the Brachiosauri have been able to modify those to act as their fighters.
Oh, okay.
So both the Alunda and the Brachiosauri do have organic, because actually, I believe they have organic shuttles as well. So there's like yet another type of parasitic creature that basically serves, like two different types rather, that serve as their quote unquote shuttlecraft. And they operate separately in terms of how they connect or land on the ship, better, so to speak, relative to how the fighters do. So there's a much bigger separation between a fighter bay and a shuttle bay on either of the organic ships. But for now, the Alunda don't have, they haven't yet been given a creature that's the size of a PF. I mean, I suppose technically it's possible. But the Brantodons, they actually use, they call them baby dragon ships, but they're clones that are induced to birth early. And so
Oh, okay.
they function as a brood that are psychically linked to the dragon ship that's controlling them. So
Oh, okay.
a bit morbid, but
Oh, agreed, agreed, agreed.
the Brantodons are kind of,
Cause
they're
I'm
not
sorry.
great.
I think about Brantanon, and then using younger dragons, i.e. babies, basically. And it's like, that's a bad thing. But cloning.
They lobotomize their dragons too, because the dragons have a strong natural intelligence, and so they actually have to worry about them going rogue, which basically means that the enough of their innate intelligence reawakens. Because the difference is that for the Alunda, for the high, the Mern rather, when they use the space whales have no innate intelligence in the same way. So
Right.
even though it's, not quite the same as when you have a metal ship, but nonetheless, the creature, it basically does what they command it to do. It doesn't, they don't really have to worry about it fighting back. So although what's interesting is that we don't haven't seen them yet, but later in the timeline, so what happens is the Alunda, sorry, all the Mern. Because so the Mern are kind of like a land octopus species. They're the creatures that actually operate the Alunda hunt host ships. They actually eventually, what happens is an exile ship from the Sigbirians shows up in their territory in the middle of the Andromedan and Soldier invasions. And they actually offer, because what it is that the Mern create these organic interfaces. So they don't actually control the bio ship, the host ship directly. These interfaces basically do the work for them. So they're kind of like organic computers. And
Right.
so you're standing there and you're going beep, 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 whatever, and you're interfacing with the interface. And then the other end of the interface is actually communicating of a sort with the host creature. Like, say, if you want to like make it turn left or make it fire a firebolt or make it do this, whatever. And so the Sigvarians actually offered that they would work together to use their viral intelligence to actually control those interfaces. And by doing that, you basically have the equivalent of an X-ship.
Wow.
But yeah, so in the future, should we get to X technology modules for Omega, then the Alunda ships in that file, they have to basically invent an entirely new set of rules to represent big tech, so to speak,
right,
for an Alunda bio ship.
So, let me back up just for a moment. So you're telling me in the future, you know, the future in the timeline, then when it comes to Alunda, they actually make a treaty with the Sigvarians?
Well, treaty is too strong a word, because this is like an exile ship. Like, it's fleeing the most recent defeat by the Sigvarians. And so they've got nowhere else to go. There's just like maybe just one ship full of exiles. And both sides kind of out of desperation come up with the idea that instead of trying to infect people, the Sigs would find a way to could take over the bio interface aboard the living ship. And so in theory, the Mern would still be vaccinated, so they wouldn't themselves be taken over by the Sigs. But the Sig exiles would be in the control interface.
Right, but at the same time,
because they'd be able to control the ship faster than a manual interface can.
Okay. But that, to me, implies an alliance that means that the Sigvarians have control of the Alunda. I'm sorry, the whale ships themselves. Is the whale ships called the Alunda?
Well, so the actual ships are Alunda with a capital A, and then the wild creatures are Alunda with a small case A.
Okay.
But supposedly, the interface is still set up in a way that it takes command from the Mern pilot,
right,
so to speak.
Right, right. Oh,
basically,
understood. But
like,
if the Sigvarians are enhancing that connection, couldn't they in theory take control?
Well, they seemingly haven't, because the other thing too is that apparently, from how it's been described in the data so far, it can only do it with the assistance of the Mern, like the two sides, you know, going in the same direction. So I guess there probably have to be some sort of safeguard in case the Sigs try to go off script. But
yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
I
would think they could be inoculated.
Sort of support network.
The control systems could be inoculated just in case the Sigvarians go rogue and go, we're taking over.
Yeah, that's true. You could like have like a vaccine thing, and then you inject it and it kills the Sig, and you still have the control interface. So,
but that seems
usually when the Sig takes over a sentient being, it actually erases the original consciousness. So when you vaccinate someone who's infected by the Sigs, they turn into a potato. But the living interface, the interface itself has no actual intelligence. So it just becomes like I guess you could call it a non-X interface. So that's probably kind of like it'd be like a security station on the Klingon ship or something like that. Maybe there's some sort of mutiny rule that you could put in.
Mm.
But again, like, the question is, what is the Sig going to do? Where are they going to go? Because they need to be supported by a logistical network.
In the case of the Alunda, they have a home that where they actually can live and not have to worry about someone coming and wanting to kill them.
Well, because, I mean, remember, the time this agreement is made, both the Soldier and the Andromedans are trying to take over the galaxy, so it's...
Minor details.
You can't really go anywhere. Like, you're basically, you don't really have much of a choice, so...
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, in terms of mind warfare, I believe that they both have T-bombs, but... That's not quite the same thing as like a mine that is stationary.
Right.
I don't believe either of them actually have that, because they don't have a creature that is sedentary enough to be able to basically stay in orbit or in deep space. So the thing is that the probably, especially for the Branthodons, they most likely, even Steve Petrick was mentioning this before, that they probably don't have space bases at all. Like all their bases are probably on a planet surface.
Right.
Because they don't have shielding even, and they don't have like a ship or a thing that you can stay still. And on the other hand, the Ilunda, they have trouble because their ground bases, they can only grow because the space whales, see what they do is, speaking of things getting weird, they clone a version of their whale that has no head. So it's basically like the body of the whale, but it can't really function separately at all. So, and what's worse is that the creatures are designed to work in space. So if you try to grow them in an atmosphere, they can only get so big. So you can only get about as big as like a planetary control base, so to speak. So you basically would have to either, so they were talking about, like SVP was talking about, like for example, the Branthodons, if they had a quote unquote star base, it'd probably be a whole bunch of smaller bases networked together on the surface of a planet, maybe spread out over a continent or something.
Right.
But it's similarly, an Ilunda base could be several smaller base, like, of these headless creatures kind of like floating together
Which
in
is
close
that just sounds
proximity
so weird.
and working as a de facto star base. Yeah. So neither of them are going to follow the regular, even the regular Omega rule book. So they're probably just not going to have mind warfare to worry about. So I guess it's just going to be one of those, it's part of a give and take when you use an organic empire. So
Right, understood.
you're just going to have to
As you pointed
make the best
out,
of it.
to me the biggest issue there is just the whole idea of bases for the organics, because as you stated there, the Branthodons, probably if they have bases, they're going to be on the planet, and they're not going to have any shielding at all, which makes it things even more difficult for them. The only shielding is going to be kind of a quote unquote kind of natural shielding, whatever. Of an atmosphere, and even that, it's not really shielding at all. It's can make some target modifiers for the weapons that are going to be they want to destroy of those bases. So, to me, the Branthodons have a severe disadvantage when it comes to the idea of even expanding their empire, at all. And they're limited definitely to habitable systems. And the bases would have to be on planet.
Oh, couldn't they maybe do an asteroid thing? Like the Jindaran? Just take over an asteroid?
Well, the problem is that their armor is not really armor. It's basically like organic armor plating. So what it is like, if you look at an SSD for a dragon ship, the exoskeleton is shown as like a single unit, but in reality, what it is that the back of the dragon has various armor plates, and also the body of the dragon naturally kind of like undulates, like it's kind of like quote unquote flying or whatever. So those plates are kind of moving. So there's no actual, most of the time, the direct link is not really there. So it's more like the actual back of the dragon has sub plates, sub all objects on each one, and together they accumulate to aggregate rather to function as a ship. So I think you still need to have like a living organism because all of the Branthodon technology is like alive. So I don't know to what extent it requires the dragon ship to be there as opposed, or if it requires to be inside an atmosphere. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, in theory, they could try to hollow out an asteroid, but they'd have to be super careful in terms of making sure that there's no leakage. Like they probably have to like have some sort of organic thing, like a forest, so to speak, or something like growing inside the middle of the asteroid to kind of like keep the technology alive, so to speak. So it would be a different, I mean, not to say it's impossible, it'd be curious to see, but it would be a very different proposition compared to what the Jindarians do. So, but because the other thing too is that the Jindarians can install like unique technology like transporter dampeners, that sort of thing. But I don't know if I don't think that. Because the thing that makes transporter operations difficult on a dragon ship is because those plates keep moving, it's very difficult to get a transporter lock to or from the actual ship. So I think it's like...
And the ships themselves are organic, so it's hard. I would think it would be hard to delineate between a person and the ship itself.
Well, it's more like they have to basically command the ship to stop undulating, so it kind of has to like stay still long enough so that the transporter can actually get the lock, I guess, if they're beaming off, that sort of thing. Because they're used to the idea that you just land on the planet directly anyway, and then you can get off the ship, dragon, I suppose.
Right.
But when you're trying to target it, then that's a tricky thing. So, yeah, I mean, like they wouldn't have that protection if it was an asteroid, though, because like, if they could get the plates attached on there, then it would still... You're basically just got the bare rock to protect you. So, and again, no shielding. So... It would be tricky, but yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it'd have to be a big asteroid so they could actually grow enough food on it, so to speak. So like, you know, lots of UV lamps and like, you know, soybeans or whatever it is that they it is that they feed it on. But
I'm sure they could figure it out.
But yeah, you know.
Heck, I'm assuming the Jadarians do the same thing. They
actually.
I would think the Jindarans in the same way of actually they grow food, I would think, in their spaceships.
Well, they grow food for themselves, but not for their technology.
Right.
Because it's still, they're still a metal hull empire, so to speak. So still have regular warp engines and
Right. Oh.
But actually with the Alunda, it's tricky, interesting because the space whales they eat the there's this came up in Captain's Log. So the whale creatures, they actually eat the rare minerals that are used to make egg ships.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah, it's basically before anyone knew what X technology was, it didn't matter because they basically, you know, they were just kind of like these rare substances, whatever, that just happens here in certain star systems or whatever. And then the whales would show up and consume those. But then, once people knew what X technology was, then it's kind of like you're looking for the same stuff, but you can't really use the space whales as sheepdogs unless you're the Murren, I suppose. Because, but even for them, they don't need those X ships. The problem is that it turned out that their home star system actually has one of the highest concentrations of those minerals in anywhere in known space. Which is probably the reason why later in the timeline it gets conquered by a people called the Acheri Dynasty. Now, we don't know what the Acheri ships are like, but if they're metal ships and they use X technology, then they'd have a real good reason to want to take over that star system.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's kind of like it'd be a weird one in F&E terms because like you're eating your XTPs, but then if you lose, then whoever conquers you gets a boost in terms of building their X ships. Very different to what you expect to see in Alpha. But in terms of the Branthalons, though, they're space dragons, just like they eat things like organic life forms and stuff, like I guess you know, cows and people and stuff. So I guess you have to be able to farm, because that's the thing as well. The Branthalons have a big problem with that. The bigger their ships are, the more planets they have to assign to be food planets so that they can actually feed them.
Right.
Because you'd have to like you almost do like a circle. Like say maybe you've got five planets and they're all agricultural worlds, and then your space dragon or your dragon ship rather can park only at one of them for like maybe a few months to a year at a time, and then it has to move on and so that the planet goes fallow and can actually grow more food to be eaten again and so on. So that itself is basically a major impediment to, which is just as well because some of their bigger ships are really scary. So that's probably another reason why they're so aggressive, because it's a lot more cost effective if you're eating someone else rather than eating your own planet's worth. So
true. Very true.
You can kind of see why the Alunda didn't get along with them.
Yeah. Jeez. I was reading here that you mentioned that the Brentanons were actually destroyed as a faction prior to the Andromeda invasion, which makes sense.
Yeah, they got whacked in Y-189.
Question: what happened to the dragons? Were they all killed, or I'm assuming
So
that's.
yeah, basically the what it is that the dragon ships, it's too difficult for the Brantanons to catch live dragons. So they actually clone. They captured one, like a smaller one, early on, and they've been cloning it ever since.
Right.
So basically, what happened is that at their home world, they had these cloning facilities. And that's basically what they use to create new dragon ships. So, in theory, the long-term problem might have been the diminishing returns, because the more you clone something, the less viable the clone is long-term. So, but yeah, the Alunda basically showed up in Y-89
Well,
and completely whacked the
at
home world
that
and
level,
destroyed all the facilities. So.
at that level of tech, they won't have a diminishing returns because they could literally just have the genome stored and just reproduce the whole thing.
Right, that's what I was thinking about the same thing, because they should be able to clone the original dragon itself, and it's not like a photocopying issue, which is you're taking a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy, and sooner or later it turns basically black, because of the process itself makes it kind of dimmer. In that case, there shouldn't be an issue, because they should have the original copy. The original one, and then just copy that one.
Well, actually, there's a story in Captain's Log 40 where they do raise that issue, because the story has them, they're attempting to capture a new live dragon, because they're start it's like the single story set in like the early Y-180s or something, because supposedly the scientists at the home world are actually starting to run into problems, because they're wearing out the original material, and so they're getting to the point where they didn't know how much longer that the cloning process would be viable. So, but I mean, it didn't matter in the long run, because they were destroyed before it became an issue either way. But I mean, in theory, they could have tried to find some other solution. But at this point, the only surviving dragon ships are, they're escapees, like trying to go to other parts of Omega. So. Probably want to steer by away from parading space, because the methodons themselves are lizards, so that wouldn't end well for them. But yeah, although the Alunda get theirs in a few decades later, because that section of the Omega map, there's a new group that appears just at the tail end of the Andromedan War called the Achari. They're one of the Omega's Lost Futures factions that Bruce Grell is talking about,
Okay.
and they actually they conquer the Alunda home space in Y-218. And so the Alunda government actually flees to Volpa space, so they become a faction of a group called the Volpa Confederacy, who are kind of like the meaner version of the Mitterrand Alliance. So, and so they, by the end of the timeline, Volpa home space is gone. Oh, sorry, maybe Volpa home space is still going. Alunda home space has been taken over by the Acheri. But the government in exile exists as a member subgroup of the Volpa Confederacy.
Right.
So
Right.
whether they get their worlds back is another story, because we have to see what the final cycle of the timeline has to say at some point in the future.
Understood. Understood. That will be a long time in coming if it ever comes. which is one of the things that also, of course, that you mentioned in the Mine Warfare post, which was, of course, the FC Omega conversion project, which has been, to say the very least, has been on hold.
No,
For
there's the campaign project is going ahead.
right, oh, understood, and I think that's great, and that I'm not sure who, if it was Doug who said or somebody else,
What's that?
which was that I think Doug, you felt like Having the different empires campaign capable that actually would encourage people to actually play the Omega empires more, because of the current array of ships is not exactly coherent. And I think you also, and of course, I think you also mentioned, of course, the you just want to make sure that what they didn't run into the same issue that the Alpha Octon ran into, which is the whole issue way back when, which was the cookie cutters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which I think most people agree was, okay, you really lost the flavor of the individual empires when that happened. When, okay, which I think the root cause of that is like almost empire envy. One group gets this ship. Oh, well, this empire, the other empires have to get that ship too, right?
No, that wasn't it. It was more along the lines of balancing, balance-itis. That was a game. I think that was a game design decision. When they started doing the cookie cutter thing, because if you notice that it really kind of all happens in that one time frame, roughly during a significant chunk of the publication period, where they come out with the cookie cutter kind of thing, where everybody gets the same series of ships.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the original game, you have a few expansions for it, where they add the different empires and so forth, and they're all really have the unique thing going. And then after that, they have a point where it becomes a whole bunch of, like, the cookie cutter thing comes into play. And it's really when they focus on the general war, I think, in a lot of their publications, that they start doing that. So they come out with, War Destroyer X for one race. They make something similar for everybody.
Right.
And they try to have everything basically, all game balanced, whereas in the original thing that made the game really stand out and unique at the time, was that it was somewhat balanced, but it wasn't balanced because everybody got the same exact class of ship based on the exact like, this is the War Destroyer X and it's got this movement rate and that, and it was just like, I think it was more of a design decision than a, everybody complained about, we all want that ship for our race, because they pretty much all came out in all those different expansions of, the R modules, I think,
mm-hmm.
if I remember kind of correctly.
Oh, understood. The question also comes into being in my mind, is not just that, but was there some pressure from Task Force Games to produce the R modules? Put out a product. It might not be the greatest product in the world, but it's a product and people will buy and therefore will make money and so forth.
Probably. I can't really speak for them.
Oh, agreed.
You go back and you have to like really analyze the whole the issues they were having with Paramount and everything else under the sun at the time. There was that whole period of time where they were very restricted on what they could do.
Right.
It's an interesting thing. It's a very interesting rabbit hole to go down. So.
Well,
yeah.
One thing is that's actually, I mean, even Bruce Graham himself talked about some of these things when he talked about the creation of Omega, and he was basically saying that part of it is basically due to the need to keep the TV empires present. So, there has to be a Federation, there has to be a Klingon, Romulan Empire, and so forth. Now, I mean, when you're playing Federation and Empire, you basically have one of two alternatives: either the Klingons win, or it's a draw. And like when the Andromedas come along, as the Andros win or they lose, whatever. So that's actually quite interesting there. But they're not basically, there's kind of like, You see, the thing is that a lot of it in hindsight, I don't know if it's necessarily fair to judge, because, I mean, if you basically turn around and say, like, why does every Empire in the Alpha Octet use the same phaser? And, you know, if you were designing SFB from scratch, then maybe you'd have two or three different phaser types, but then you'd have to figure out how to balance them, whatever. So they probably would work differently in a historical campaign where you have things like electronic warfare and so on, but then they wouldn't necessarily work as well in a tournament. So as Barry Kirk noticed, but there'd basically probably be a different approach taken with that sort of thing. But I think the other thing too is because, yeah, it's basically, you're playing for a draw for the most part in terms of the design. So it's only really the IFC, of not counting the Andromedans, who of course have always been their own thing. But the IFC tend to have bigger and meaner ships than everyone else. But they're more expensive than everyone else as well. So but the other thing too is that in the historical timeline, they don't play in the general war. They wait until do their own pacification separately. Although that's one of the things that makes Module C6 so interesting, because if you have the Paravians still around as a modern empire, they drag the IFC into the general war. And so you're basically doing things that are different that way. And also the quantum wave torpedo is fun. I mean, I think it's a lot more fun than some of the historical Alpha weapons. Like, hey, drones are my probably least favorite thing. Like, I'm just not excited about them, like, at all. And, you know, in hindsight, you know, the other thing too is that, I mean, like, this just came up in the discussion about a guy who wants to have a variant of the Federation heavy cruiser where two of the photons are replaced with plasma Fs. And I'm,
yeah,
like, you know, the problem is that no one knew the plasma carronade had not been invented as a rule when the first plasma variant Feds came out. And if someone had a time machine and went back and said, hey, you know what, guys, this is a really cool thing that the Gorns are going to come up with called the carronade. And in the rules, it tells you, you can actually create a weapon that's the carronade only. So it doesn't bolt, it doesn't have a seeking plasma, it's literally just a carronade. You call it a PLC, that's what you mark on the SSC. Give that to the Federation. And then make it like, you basically, if you have a Federation ship on the Romulan front, you can give it drones, or you give it these. Because if you think about it, that's what they did in Omega with the Federal Republic, because it's starting in Y-181. You have an FRA ship, and you have a choice. You can either take Type B tachyon missile bikes, so you've got a seeking weapon, or you can still use the short-range cannon, which is kind of like a modified version of an ADD, but you pay energy points to fire it because it's more powerful. So you're getting one or the other. And both of them are, you know, they're more useful for different types of opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, would be way more interesting, you know, because you're not getting the Feds, oh, look, they've got drones, and they've got plasma torpedoes, and they've got photons. Like, it's, you'd be saying, here's the Federation, photons are the main armament, but hey, there's this cool carronade thing. It's only really useful against the Romulans, but okay, you pick something else on the Klingon front. And so I think that would have been an interesting way. But then, I don't know, see, a part of the issue as well is that you're right, basically, the middle years, like in Alpha terms, the middle years last for 40 years. And it's a lot of where the interesting stuff happens in terms of the different ship design. But then you're right, the General War came along and basically hijacked a lot of the ship developments.
Right.
But in Omega, that's not going to happen because, for one thing, the middle years in Omega last about 120 years or so, 140. And there's a lot of stuff that happens then. And even then, once you get further into the timeline, you add things like warp refits or warp cruisers and stuff, they're going to look nothing like each other. Like, look at Module Omega 5. Like, if you look at the gunboats are basically probably the most advanced technology that we've seen for Omega. And they're not anything like each other because Bruce, he made a point of saying, because, see, part of the thing is, well, this is another thing in Alpha, is that the rules for fast patrol ships, they're straitjacketed by the fact that the engines that they have can only be a certain size. And so the ship that they're mounted on can only be a certain size. That's why a Conjectural Federation PF looks the same number of boxes as a Tholian PF or an IFC PF or whatever.
Right.
Like, you have a few differences in terms of what weapons you can launch. But by and large, they function the same way. They've got the same kind of warp booster packs and stuff. But in Omega, that's totally not the case. The Volusia warp engines are purposely designed so that some empires will only have 4 PFs worth flotilla, but those PFs will be huge. And then the Drex, on the other hand, they have 8 TS to a flotilla, but they're basically the size of interceptors. So eventually they're not great shakes, but we've got eight of them, and suddenly that's a lot of hypercannons. And so, you know, there's some really cool stuff. I mean, I love the variety of PFs in the Omega Octant. And so that itself is basically a sign of how, even as more advanced technology comes along, not just counting X-ships, but even like war cruisers and stuff, there's still plenty of room that's baked into the Omega setting to make sure that cookie cutter is going to be the last thing on your mind.
Okay.
At least I hope, because the key is to make sure that the Mesrons work and that they're viable and functional as an empire. And then because they're the baseline, then everyone else can be dialed in an appropriate way so that they're each doing their own thing in a way that's not like any other empire. And that's, but at the same time, it's still functional. So trying to do 20 Enivars at a time is not going to happen. It shouldn't have happened in the first place. But getting one and working at it over and over and so that you get it right, and then moving on to the next one, I hope that in the long distance future, you know, the future of ADB or whatever, people will be able to see these products and say, you know what, this works great. And it works. It doesn't work like the stuff I used to, which is also great, but it still kind of has its own internal logic where if you have 1,000 BPV and you use that 1,000 BPV to buy a squadron of ships or a fleet maybe, you'll still end up with a force that still functions the way the Empire is supposed to, and you don't feel like you're being shortchanged, even if the individual cruiser gets beaten up by the other guy's cruiser. So, you know, because that's kind of closer to what Bruce had in mind, where they're not supposed to be, you know, match for match, like class for class. But when you step back and take a look at the Empire as a whole, you can find a ways to make them competitive. But yeah, some of them lose, some of them do end up getting beaten in the timeline or absorbed or, you know, turned in a different direction, technologically speaking. So there's going to be winners and losers. But, you know, hopefully that can be done in a way that still, you know, you still feel like you have a chance, even if, you know, the tool set that you have is not the same that everyone else has.
Right, right. And I think that's critical, that that's not that they be balanced, but at the very least, you know, you have certain things that are just so off kilter that there's no way, you know, if this empire ever faces one empire, because from the looks of it, when it comes to the map of the Omega Octant, they met up with a lot of different empires. You know, they weren't really that truly isolated as with the Alpha Octant. And given that, you know, they should be able to have put up a good fight, you know, they don't have to be equal. They just have to be able to fight each other and not have to one. It's just a complete slaughter.
But that's actually what I tried to do, because in that thread, I don't know if you, I think you mentioned it before, but yeah, there's a thread that I post on the BBS, and there's a lot of individual sub posts because, you know, it's too big a topic to post at once. But Steve Cole mentioned that there's like a list of 85 pages worth of SSDs. I can probably think of more now, but I posted about that in terms of basically trying to unpack, because one of the golden rules that ADB has noted is that, but they also have to replace, because the other thing too is four of the five existing Omega modules, if they want to be offered as PDFs, they have to be totally redone, because the original files were lost in a computer crash. And even then you have the question, are they going to be redone in the standard SFB format, which is something I personally prefer, or are they going to be redone back in Bruce's Omega format?
Right.
Which I wouldn't be quite so keen on, because I think it's a problem to sequester the development of Omega to people who only know how to use the software to make Bruce's SSDs. Like, if he had a time machine and went back and said, listen, Bruce, Federation Commander is going to exist in a few years. That's where the cool Omega ships cards can be. Let SFB have the bog standard Omega, I get the SSDs for Omega, so that you're not separating them from the other settings. But anyway. But the thing is that one thing that ADB said is that when those four mega robot modules, and then also an update to the fifth one, which was done by ADB themselves, the ships cannot be invalidated in terms of people who already own the SSDs.
Right.
They should not feel shortchanged if you update the SSD books and include things like warp refits. So, for example, the current Meteron Heavy Cruiser is like a middle-year ship. Basically, it's got 26 warp. So it's kind of like a middle-year Hydron Ranger
right.
or a Galinti Strike Cruiser. And in theory, in WISE 173, there'd be a plus version of that Hybrid Cruiser that basically gives you speed 30 warp. But it's going to have to be offered as a separate SSD because it has to be sold as a new product, which is fine.
Right.
But just so that anyone knows, if they're getting the revised version of Module Omega 1, the version of the Meteron Heavy Cruiser that has 26 warp is going to have 26 warp in there. So that's non-negotiable.
Yeah.
But it's okay. So that what I did is I basically took a list of all the ships that exist in those five Omega modules, and B, the ships that are in Captain's Log, and C, a list of ships that should exist that would go into this new campaign module. And so, for example, one of the Captain's Logs has a playtest Meteron Command Cruiser. Now, that Command Cruiser has never been formally published, so I basically think it's perfectly logical for it to have the warp refit offered as shade boxes on the SSD in this new product, because it's not invalidating anyone's current copy of the module. So I'm hoping that's actually going to be how it goes. But on the other hand, this new module is probably going to have some, but not all, of the current modules 1 to 5 Meteron chips offered as separate, quote-unquote, plus SSDs that will have the warp refits on there. So those would be, that'll just be the way it is. So, but that's also fine, you know, based on how things have been set up. But again, not every ship is going to get every refit, because some of the ships are just plain old weird. Like they're kind of Franken ships. They don't really have, they can't really push the warp engines further than they are, in my view.
Mm-hmm.
Then other ones, they fall out of service before things like PFs come along. So they're never going to have a mechlig refit. So that's also just going to be the way it goes, because, I mean, the Magellanic Cloud does the same thing. There's a number of the older ships that the Magellanic Empires have. They just stop existing after the Andromedans invade, and so they don't historically get these refits, like for things like PFs. So we don't need the Battlefly get PFs anyway. So yeah, basically it's going to be that. And what I did is that there's about, I want to say 12 to 13 of the pre-existing ships, like that, so there's a heavy cruiser, light cruiser, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Those will likely get warp refit SSDs. Then you've also got things like the command cruiser I mentioned. That would, in my view at least, that's probably going to get a new SSD that would have the refit option, so that you, the player, can just, you know, cross out the shader boxes if you don't want them, or leave them on if you want to use the refitted version of the ship. But again, even with the refit, that ship is, it first entered service in, like, I want to say Y55, and the warp refit happens in Y173. So that's 80 years that you have of lots of ups and downs coming from, where you can fight the middle years version of that ship, and it'll be perfectly fine historically. So by no means should anyone feel obligated to rush to the most advanced version of a ship, unless you want to fight the Andromedans, I suppose. Beyond that, then there's basically new things, because compared to Alpha, the newer technology kind of staggers its way in. So
mm-hmm.
like in Alpha, you're used to the idea that war cruisers start showing up at around late Y-160s or
right.
early Y-170 or something. And then suddenly, there's a whole swathe of them all across the Alpha options.
Right.
But in Omega, it's not going to be the same story, because the first ones historically show up in Y-187. And it's only the Meteorons and the Federal Republic that start with them. And some of their enemies are not going to get them in time, at least not before the Andromedans show up. So they're going to have to, it's the same as with the current PF rules, they're going to have to wait. And that's okay, because you know, if a new technology gives you an advantage in the conflict, that's the Omega way. You know, if you fall behind, then you pay for it. So, but you don't necessarily mean you get destroyed, but it just means that maybe you'll lose some territory and you'll have to think about trying to get it back in the future, unless the soldier show up and put the life out of all your planets. So yeah, basically there's things though on this list. You'll see things like war cruisers and war destroyers and so on. And I even came up with the idea of how they might look on the SSD, because are you familiar with the Mistron SSD? Do you have a sample there somewhere you can show people?
Which one?
Well, do you have the Mistron heavy cruiser in the client?
Yeah. Yeah, I can bring that now, up.
Okay. All right. Now, when you bring it up, one thing that you'll notice is that this actually was a Shapeways thing, too. So if you want to bring up the Shapeways, of course, Shapeways doesn't exist.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's a page I have. Yeah, Shapeways 2.0 is not really set up for the same sort of stuff anymore. But I still have a thread on the Fed Commander forum where I've actually posted pictures of some of the Mistron Shapeways 1.0s minis I got. And you can actually see Matt Lawson actually did a really good job in terms of designing them to match how the SSDs work, because most Mistron ships have, they call it a floating firing platform. So it's basically on the SSD, it's kind of like the thing you see, like the square you see on the back, and it's got these like wings sticking out the side. And so if you look at the Shapeways miniature, there's literally a raised platform sticking out the back of the ship, and it's got wings on the side, and the wings have like the tachyon missile launchers and stuff like that. So the bigger the ship, the bigger the wings, but the actual platform itself is the same size. So whether it's the destroyer all the way up to the dreadnought, it all uses the same floating platform. But the platform has on a certain grid, so it's got a certain number of boxes that go left and right and up and down. So if you're building a mission variant, that's the space that you have to work with in terms of like where the cargo boxes can go, or where some special sensors can be put in and all that kind of stuff. And also where the firing arcs can be, because the way that the platform is set up is that on cruisers, you're basically stuck with FA arcs for the forward phasers and RA arcs for the aft ones. You better show up, you can turn your ship. Do you see that, or?
Yeah, it took me a moment. Finally got the Mistron heavy cruiser up.
Okay. All right, well, while you're doing that, do you want to actually bring up the Shapeways miniature so people can see it too? I have a Mistron heavy cruiser on the list.
Okay. Where would that be?
So go to the FedCom forum.
Right.
Go to scroll down to where it says
FedCom. Okay. Oh, I forgot. Federation.
Yeah, I know that one.
Commander. And that's FC Forum. There it is. And it's in the miniature section?
Yeah, that's one.
Okay, miniatures.
Yep. And then go to, there should be a thread that says My ADB Shapeways Minis.
My ADB Shapeways Minis, there it is. Image heavy.
Yeah. That's right. So if you scroll down a bit, you'll see my not entirely great attempts to paint some of these. But yeah, you can see first or second page down, you'll see a couple of the Mistron ships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
some of them, each picture shows it unpainted.
Right.
That's in the, I guess, what they used to call smooth fine detail plastic. And then you can actually see a bit of what it looks like when you paint it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that platform in the middle, that's basically a common feature for most of the current crop of Mistron ships. That's a kind of a good way to distinguish it's a Mistron.
Oh, okay. That actually brings up a
question. But if you see that Volta ship, the one that's orange, the blockade runner, that one's actually designed by, I guess, kind of like a rebel faction within the Mistron space to not have the platform. So it's kind of like diverging away from the Mistron template.
Oh.
So that blockade runner That's kind of like a sample of what the Volpo would be like as a future faction when they get developed more fully.
Understood. Question about your miniatures. And that is, I see that, you basically got the not clear. Let's put it that way. Clear kind of miniatures. Why did you get that instead of one of the solid ones? Like, there's a particular reason?
Yeah, because the plastic quality is better. Because when you get the what they used to call frosted ultra retail or smooth fine detail plastic, that's just how they were. But they were higher quality than the thicker, like the solid one block ones. So yeah, it's just that's just how it turned out. Well, okay. Yeah, it used to be interesting because I guess if you like an empire that has some sort of quote unquote cloak, then you just buy the miniature twice and one on one painted, and then look, I've got my Zoltan Stealthfield. There you go.
Yeah, I mentioned that a few times, where, I think that was a great idea, to have the clear / frosted ones and have so that can be representing a cloaked ship. I've mentioned that multiple times.
Okay, so if you have the SSD up as well, then one thing you'll notice is about the platform is that its default weapon setup that you see on some of these ships as well is it's got a tachyon gun. It's got two tachyon guns in the middle, and they fire forward, but they can also fire directly along the hex.
Right. Direct behind the ship, yeah, I see. I see the mention in here. Uh oh. Did I just lose Gary? Okay. No, I didn't. He's still on. It's just I think it just cut off. Maybe his phone died. But that makes sense when it comes to the tachyon guns, that they can fire directly behind it. Because when you see the, go over here, and you go to the, right here, which is the miniature, you can see right here, that's the tachyon gun, and they have a clear shot behind them, which is makes things interesting. I totally forgot about that. Special arc of the Maceron tachyon guns, and we have the tachyon missiles here, and these some also have a couple of tachyon guns here on the outside, which definitely seeing the miniatures makes the SSD a little more clear, and definitely as Gary pointed out, I think I might have lost Gary because I don't hear him at the moment. I'm still recording, right? Yeah, I'm still recording. Just double checking.
Did you say something?
I did.
Okay.
Assume you're hearing me, it's not hearing Gary because I'm not hearing Gary.
Yeah. Maybe he accidentally cut himself off on the phone.
That's possible. He might have actually like the mute button.
So if you're listening, you might want to check your mute button or call back in.
Yep. Okay.
So.
But yeah, seeing the actual miniature makes more sense about this whole thing and that the design. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I
had to sneeze there for a moment.
Kissing tight.
Thank you. I assume people didn't want to hear me record that. Yep. Gary left the meeting and hopefully he'll be back. But anyway. And let's see if I can bring up another piece here. Da-da-da. Let's bring up the light cruiser. There it is. And that's a little more rounded. You can see here. Still has basically the same setup, which is you have weapons up front, and then in this kind of, I don't know, kind of bar at the back of the ship. I guess that's the way I can describe it. It's not exactly a great description. Hey, Gary, you back? Gary? So it's just me. Okay. Let me do one thing. Shouldn't have a problem. Let me just show this. Yeah, I'm here and Doug's here. Right, Doug?
What? Yeah, I'm right here.
Yep, okay. I can hear, I can see your video, audio.
Is he still connecting through TalkShoe?
Yes.
Okay. And the platform you were looking at ditching soon because of stuff like this.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, well, Discord sounds pretty good tonight because of Doug got a new microphone and it's, and it definitely better when it comes to that. Hopefully my melodious voice has always been good because I had this, what this is. Yeah, the Blue Yeti. I replaced my other microphone. I'm not sure if it's, I'd have to check up there because the box is up there. Should have my old, I think it's an SM-01 microphone, which is pretty good. I just decided to get this one, but I forget why. I guess I was looking for a better microphone that was also, that was USB. Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if Gary's going to come back. He came back for a moment, and
maybe he's having trouble connecting.
Well, my guess is not have. Okay, he's back. Okay, let's try. Gary, can you try to talk? Cause okay, still don't hear you. Okay, and let me see. I didn't change any of the. What the heck? Well, let me check something. There and there. Okay.
This might sound like an odd question, but Gary. Is there an app you can use your own Discord on your phone?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I do. Okay. That's weird.
So
I did not do anything. I think TalkShoe might. Another reason. I think the audio settings got modified. Uh-huh. I just checked the audio settings. The audio settings had been changed since when I actually started the call. So it might have been TalkShoe itself and not you specifically. Yeah,
right. Okay. All right. Or me, Atlantic-y. But yeah, so anyway, we were talking about the platform.
Yes.
So it's got like the two plus two plus two and then one plus one plus one, the boxes, like when you look on the SSD.
Mm-hmm.
So my idea was that on warships, like a war cruiser and so forth,
right,
you turn the boxes around. So I actually put a little diagram of this in the BBS thread as well, if you want to see it. So the idea being that you make the boxes thinner, so like they're a half box width away from each other, but longer. So for example, the default weapon version of the module would have four phaser W1, so two and two on either side. And then it would have a half box distance between them and the tachyon guns in the middle. And you would have three tachyon guns in the middle. And then at the back of the module, you'd have another little space where you'd fit four wide-angle phaser threes instead of two, and your probe launcher. So if you compare, say, a war cruiser, oh, sorry, a war destroyer versus a destroyer, the war destroyer gets one more tachyon gun, and it gets two more wide-angle phaser threes. But because of the way the platform is built, they're still kind of in weird arcs.
Mm.
So the comparison you could make is with the Carnivants, because if you look at the SSDs in Module C6, certain ships like the Carnivant, War Cruiser, and War Destroyer, those kind of close to how they distinguish from their Light Cruiser and Destroyer counterparts. So they might add a few more disruptor cannons on the front, or they'll have a couple of more phaser threes on the back. But aside from that, there's not a massive difference in terms of the weapon armament. So, because the Carnivants are kind of like the closest alpha equivalent, I guess you could say, to what's going on here, because they've got big missiles, they've got heavy weapons that fire twice a turn. The only thing is that they've got heal nippers, which don't exist in Omega, so right, you don't have to worry about them. But yeah, I basically feel that that is a good, like, there's, I don't have an equivalent of like a new heavy cruiser, so to speak, but yeah, basically, that would be, I think that would be kind of like an in-character way to produce a ship that represents a war cruiser or a war destroyer, but in a way that's still characterful in terms of like how it functions in SSD terms. So you're not getting a panacea, like you're not solving all of the base hull's problems. Well, because it's a brand new hull anyway. I'd say that you can't build a war cruiser out of a light cruiser, so to speak. But so, you know, if you had problems with the firing arcs before, you're probably still going to have problems with the firing arcs now.
Well,
so
I'm sorry. It's not making a different ship shouldn't solve those initial core issues, just because of that is just the makeup of how the ship was designed. That's the feel for that empire when it comes to the ship design. You know.
Mm-hmm. And so that's definitely what I have in mind when it comes to, like, what a war class, a range of ships would be for this empire. And so, but yeah, it also basically means that things might get a bit less than roomy when you're doing certain mission variants. And so, yeah, in the long term, you'd have another thing too. But the other thing as well is there's a lot of other unit types that you need, things like bases and transports and other kind of stuff like that, whatever,
right.
Minesweepers and transports and so on. And so one of the things as well is that so even in Captain's Log 21, I believe it is, the Mesrons don't do, so for example, if you look at, say, the Klingons, during the middle years, the Klingons built dedicated tug units, the T7s and the T6s. And so they look real different to a D6 or a D7, because they're purposely designed so that they have the bracing to be able to carry Klingon pods.
Right.
And similarly with the Federation. Federation, you know, the famous Hermes-class tug, like a... Oh, no, Hermes-class... No, what's the... Ptolemy-class tug. Is that right? Ptolemy-class?
I don't remember.
You basically have it. It's got the brackets, the bracings on the bottom of the saucer, so it just kind of tugs. It carries the pods.
Right.
Like so.
Mm-hmm.
But then you fast forward to the general war, and suddenly you've got things like light tactical transports, which look like your war cruisers, except they've got these pods sticking out the bottom of them. And so I don't think the Mesrons are going to do that. I think that because right now they have dedicated light tug and heavy tug designs, which have to be purpose built because they don't function the same way as the cruisers.
Right.
And I'd say that's probably going to continue. So even if in like Y205 or something like that, they come up with a new, more powerful type of tug, whatever, it's still going to be having something that you build from scratch. Like, you're not going to be able to basically stick a pod in the bottom of a war cruiser and pretend it's an LTT or something like that. That's not going to happen. So it's still going to be something that's in character for how they function. But I actually had an interesting idea about that, because if you read the history of the Omega timeline, one thing that happens is that near the beginning of the Andromeda and Soldier invasion, the Belosco home space gets destroyed. So the Belosco basically flee to different places in Omega. Mm-hmm. And the biggest number of them actually become Mesrons. They become part of the Alliance. So now, I'm not saying that the Mesrons should get Belosco technology, absolutely 100% not. But I think if you're sticking with Mesron, the building blocks of Mesron technology, you could certainly be inspired by what a Belosco ship looks like in terms of how you shape it. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, they're still kind of, you know, it looks like a crappier version of a Belosco ship already. But, I mean, you could basically, you know, have like a new light tug and it basically, you know, fits the pod in the back and so forth, the same as the current light tug. But if you basically give it lots of missile racks, because the Belosco, their ships, they have refits to give them tachyon missile racks and stuff. So, you know, you could, that would be, I think, be an interesting way to basically say that the Belosco exiles are contributing to the Alliance in the future, mm-hmm. in the later timeline, in the way that doesn't dilute their own uniqueness as a faction.
Yeah, I think that's important.
If you're playing the Mesrons in a campaign, you'll probably have a couple of, there won't be mercenaries anymore because they'll be Mesron members, but you might have a couple of Belosco ships you can hire, so to speak. But maybe a couple of your tugs have like some of their crews who just happen to be ethnic Belosco. The ships still function like regular Mesron ships, but that's part of the character because the Alliance is basically like the Federation of the ISC. It's got loads of member species.
Right.
And so you can basically lean into that in order to make sure that you're never making them, you know, bland generic, you know, LTT or theater transport kind of thing that you see elsewhere in space.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. That's how does that sound?
Sounds cool. Sounds cool. I gotta say one thing, there's a lot of work ahead.
You're not wrong. Because the one big issue, and of course, if anyone listening to this has any ideas about this, please post them on the BBS. The discussion is happening, things are happening. So, you know, if you want to get involved, now's the time. The number one thing in terms of new rules that they need is some sort of wide angle phaser 4. Because Bruce Graw never actually created most of the heavy phasers in Omega, which is really annoying. Like, the Kixa, of all people, they have a heavy version of the Gauss cannon, but there's no wide angle phaser 4, there's no radiation phaser 4, so those basically have to be drawn up from scratch. Now, it's not the most terrible thing in the world, so I'm sure some sort of reasonable thing can be done up, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's probably not going to be as powerful as the phaser 4, but it doesn't have to be, because wide angle phasers, the main thing about them is that you get a more consistent roll when you're rolling on the D6,
right.
Because
right.
you never get the same high, but you don't get the same low either. So if the wide angle phaser 4 is something like that, maybe it's got shorter range, so the base can't reset you out to you quite as far, but you can expect a more consistent amount of damage, that's perfect. So we'll need those for things like ground bases and also for like heavier bases, like if you're attacking a capital system or something like that. So like a star base or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's, I don't think that's unmanageable.
Agreed.
The only thing to bear in mind is that the later in the timeline you get, the more expensive the toys for the tachyon missiles get, because when you start off in early in the middle years, you can't go quite as crazy with the missiles that you might want to, but that's okay because that's the setting you're, that's the era you're in. But once you get into like things like Y-200, suddenly there's lots of cool things you can do with tachyon missiles, but then you have to kind of stop yourself because you end up spending like a quarter of your BPV on just on the missiles. So if the other guy has a plan for that, then, you know, maybe you shouldn't get so greedy. But, you know, that's part of the thing. That's part of the what makes it interesting. You know, like, because it's not like in Alpha. Well, I mean, technically, but, you know, you can do kind of funky things with both drones and death bolts. But
yeah.
Even with tachyon missiles, most of the racks have a slow launch rate. So, sure, you're spending money on the missiles, but if you have two racks on your ship, you're only getting one missile out per turn, because so you're not overwhelming the board with digging weapons, drone-like ones, I should say. So you have to plan carefully in terms of what your individual missiles are going to be. Are they all going to be the same type? Because that's perfectly fine too. Or are you going to keep a couple of surprises here and there? And how are you going to launch them? Because missiles have myopic zones. You can't spring one on them, someone at range zero. And they take two seeking weapon control channels to manage. So you have to decide, are you going to buy the equivalent of type 3 guidance for them? And if so, how are you going to use that? So, yeah, basically it's a part of what makes the Mesrons interesting as a faction. But I think there's ways to have it happen in a way that doesn't get to anything near the level of drone craziness that happens in Alpha, in terms of like, oh, great, you've got like a bunch of FO-11s, and how many drones do you have? And you've got scatter packs as well, and you've got like all this other stuff. Oh, please no.
Yeah.
It'll be a different kind of mission.
It should never happen for the Mesron.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you play as a Mesron player, even if you get all the cool toys that they might get later in the timeline, that will still never happen. So you'll still be able to actually play the game and hopefully have it be fun, you know, unless you're the kind of player that enjoys in launching 100 drones. So, but let's hope that's not the case.
And then you won't be playing Omega.
Yeah, basically, no.
Yeah.
So yeah, and of course, this is just the first step. I mean, once the Mesrons are done, there's lots of cool choices like the Trobriand, or Trobriand will actually going to be interesting, because you're going to ask yourself, are they going to bother with light cruisers and destroyers at all, or just stick with their frigates and heavy cruisers?
Yeah, that's a good question.
They're still going to have armor that they can eat. So they're going to be a real fun empire to play around with. And later in the timeline, you get to things like Hivers, and all their ships are going to still be two sizes smaller than everyone else's. So how are they going to make tugs work? You know, how are they going to... Are they going to have little, you know, baby pods that they can install? Because their heavy tug is basically a destroyer size.
Mm-hmm.
And are they going to be able to do anything interesting with, like, PF equivalents or something? And, you know, all these kind of things. Like, there's some really exciting things that I'd like to think are exciting anyway, that are out there. And so, but at the same time, if someone's listening to this and thinking, that all sounds really complicated, like, you know, it shouldn't be that the case at all, because Omega's major factions, you know, most of them are metal hull empires. Most of them are relatively reasonable, I guess you could say, from an Alpha perspective. Like, they're not soldier level or Andromeda level crazy. And so I'd say that once you've got like the core factions like Trobriand, Probr, Kolagar, Vari, Mesron, maybe a few bonusy ones like Volta or FRA, they're perfectly viable for people who want to basically have a quote-unquote balanced campaign and not worry about having these rock, paper, scissors issues that you'll find with some of these more kind of esoteric factions. So, but of course, if you do want to go crazy and try to infect the galaxy with your Sigvirian virus, then that's another option. So, yeah, basically, I hope that this all sounds promising. And of course, to say the 1500th time, please don't sit on the sidelines. If you have any thoughts, pop into the chat and or to the VBS and, you know, add your thoughts, and hopefully it'll make for a more successful product going forward.
Agreed. Well, with that, we need to wrap up, because it is getting damn late and I need to get my ass to bed. So, Gary, it's always a pleasure having you around. You have a good night.
Thank you. And happy talk show goodbye, Eve.
There's a penultimate episode that's going to be streamed on talk show, yes. Okay. Good night.
Indeed so. All right.
Doug, always having a pleasure having you around. Obviously, we'll talk later. But anything you want to mention before?
Yeah, Gamers is coming up in a few weeks. We're literally about, 6 weeks away now? 5-6 weeks away?
Yeah, it's
so, yeah, it is that close. And it's like, I have not been updating the events page because of life situation at the moment. But hopefully I'll get around to that fairly soon. But yeah, registration is open. It's been open for a while, as far as I recall. I might want to double check that later, but Yeah, there's that. So maybe if I can get settled down in the next week to something that is resembling less of a chaos situation, maybe might have a scenario for you to play test at the convention. So
Yeah,
I have that one I was telling you about just bouncing around in my head, but it's like, yeah, I just have to sit down and type the whole thing out, basically, get it
Understood.
prepped for you.
Okay.
So, bundle of joy. Sorry, not.
That's fine.
Yeah, gamers about 6 weeks away. Labor Day weekend, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. That's pretty much it right here in Harrisburg.
Yep. Okay. Well, you have a good night.
Thanks, you too. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So, had a nice little discussion about Omega and going forward with trying getting them campaign compatible and some of the work that has been done and as if it wasn't obvious, a lot more to go. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.